tell you how delighted I am to be here. For the last 2 days, I've been sitting in snowy woods high above the Rhine at the metadata workshop, watching flights out of Frankfurt being cancelled one by one, including the last BA flight out last night, which I was hoping to catch to ensure I was here in good time. But by getting up at 4:30 British time this morning and getting a Lufthansa flight, here I am. I'm delighted to be here. And I thank David very much for his invitation to participate in this meeting. And I'm going to talk specifically about scientific citations. And my talk will involve three parts. But just to preface that, I think the act of citing other people's preceding work is a central process in the practice of science. And it's usually formalized, as we all know, in the references that conclude journal articles. So the three ways that I want to discuss that is first by describing our new semantic publishing and referencing ontologies and how we've applied those to annotating citations. Then I want to discuss what I'm calling citations in context, the meaning of which will become apparent as we go on. And I want to conclude with a few words about our new Open Citations project. First, a word about semantic publishing. It was through our efforts in semantic publishing that I got to know David. And my definition of semantic publishing is the use of simple web and semantic web technologies to enhance the meaning of online research articles. I got frustrated by the static PDF, the visual representation of the printed page that appeared in online journals. And so a couple of summers ago, I and my colleagues decided to do something about that. We plucked an article off the web, which was published at the end of April. I actually plucked it on the 1st of May, a week after. And then we souped it up in various ways. So here is the enhanced article, and I don't want to go into this in great detail, but just to show it you live, it has things, for example, like highlighting of semantic terms. But the thing I want particularly to point you to today is what we did with the references. We were able to annotate the references, and we can turn those annotations on and off, to describe the character of the citation. Why is the author citing the paper? To get background information, to refute the paper, or why? And what is the nature of what is being cited? Now, some of that is obvious from just inspecting the text of the reference itself, but other aspects of that are not. And in particular, if that information can be made available in machine-readable form, then it becomes a very powerful tool. Presentation here. So to assist that machine readability, we have, over the last few months, been crafting a suite of complementary ontologies, which we call SPAR, the Semantic Publishing and Referencing Ontologies. And as you saw from what I've just shown you live from the journal, we initially annotated by hand each of these references, and the hope was to take that forward into something that we could automate. So this led to the creation of CITO, the citation typing ontology, which has since been modularized into a set of ontologies. CITO itself, which now just describes the existence and nature of bibliographic citations. Fabio, which I will tell you more about in a moment, which describes the object of those citations, the cited bibliographic object. And C4O, which now allows you to talk about the number of citations. And we've added some more to that. The result is SPAR. So the SPAR is described in this little diagram here. Fabio is the further aligned bibliographic ontology. It allows you to describe books, journal articles, various other things that are the products of publication. Cito is the citation. Typing ontology, Biro, the bibliographic. Reference ontology that allows you to describe how references can be assembled into bibliographies and library catalogs and so on. C4O is the citation, counting, and context characterization ontology. You'll see that in action in a minute. DOCO is the document components ontology. So you can see that bits of a publication, the preface, the results section, things like that. And then the three others on the left-hand side, publication roles, allowing you to define authors, publishers, editors, reviewers, and so on. Publication status, allowing you to define submitted, peer-reviewed, open access, and things like that. And most recently, we only finished this last week, the publication workflow ontology. And our first application of this has been to try and encode Philip's workflow that he put up as an example for his meeting coming up next month. So, Cito has two main uses. First of all, it can be used to assert the existence of a citation in machine-readable form, in RDF, the source description framework, the basic data model for describing information on the semantic web. So you can say that example one cites example two. And even if this simple statement, if made in machine-readable form for enough different citations, allows you to do clever things like automatically build citation networks that you can then interrogate. And secondly, as I've hinted already, we can now characterize the nature of citations both factually and rhetorically. So here is a Mickey Mouse example of a citation network created automatically by combining RDF statements about citations between the Reset Al paper that we chose to enhance, and a number of other papers cited by that, some of which cite the other papers too. So you can see a small network is building up there, and that's been visualized using a piece of software from MIT called Welkin. If you were able to do that for real and get extensive citation networks, that would enable you to see, at an instance, the key papers of the field, and to navigate through the citation literature of a particular domain. For example, I've chosen to cite here the 2005 SARS outbreak, which has about 1,000 papers relating to it. The other two ontologies, C4O and Fabio, C4O is a citation counting and context characterization ontology, and in the context of counting, it allows you to record not only how many times do you cite the cited paper within the text of the citing paper, once or 10 times, but also how many times has that cited paper been cited globally as determined by Scopus or Google Scholar or some other source on a particular date, which is a measure of its overall importance to the scientific community. And Fabio, adopting the Thurber model of works, expressions, and manifestations, allows you fairly fine-grained ability to define the object of the publication process, going from the abstract concept of a work through to a particular expression, the preprint you submit to the publisher, or the copy that the referee has returned with suggestions for amendments, or the final version of record, and it's manifestation in print or online as HTML or as a PDF. So, for example, a discussion might be expressed as a blog post and published in a blog. A research paper might be expressed as a journal article and published as a print object. The Rees paper we enhanced had 52 citations, and Alex Dutton, who just started working in my group, has built a very nice plugin for Exhibit, which is a data visualization program, also from MIT, in which using the RDF markup of these citations, we can now display all the citations from that paper, which was published in 2008, backwards into history, with color coding as to what they are, genealogical books, reviews, and so on, and a vertical size and a vertical position and a dot size proportional to their global citation count, as determined by Google Scholar. So you can see there's one early paper there that's cited by Reese, which is a book about wild mammals in North America. And the SPAR metadata relating to that citation is that Reese cites that because he uses data from it. It is a reference work, it is manifest as a book, it is not peer reviewed, and it has a global citation count, surprisingly low, according to Google, of 19. So these SPAR ontologies are now published, they're out there on the web, and we would like to work with publishers to have these adopted for semantic markup of papers and of references and so on. They are tools to be used. The next thing I want to talk about are citations in context. And I want to preface that by just some definition. The word reference is typically used very lazily. We have a citation within the text, we call that a reference. We call the thing in the reference list a reference, and we call what is referred to a reference. That's a little ambiguous. So we have refined that in literature. The citing article cites the cited article. Within the text, there are in-text reference pointers that denote references in the reference list. And those references in the reference list reference the cited article. So that's the terminology I'm going to use now. So, in any paper, typically, there is some text followed by a citation. And that citation, that in-text reference pointer, points to the full bibliographic reference in the reference list. But that's all you get, mostly, in scientific work. There's no indication as to why the author has cited that paper. The reasons for citing are not given. Now, that differs in classical scholarship. Of course, you would very often cite verbatim chunks of Aristotle that you were discussing, because you couldn't assume that everyone was able to get hold of the original text that you were talking about. And so the idea of citation has been honed down since then to this very lean model we have at the moment in scientific and technical and medical citations. Not quite the same in humanities. So, just to take our exemplar, Reese paper, there are 10 references within that text to a previous paper from the same group, Co et al., 1999. And here I show three examples of the context of those in-text reference pointers. So the first one here, Urban Epidemics of Leptospirosis, now occur in cities throughout the developing world during seasonal heavy rainfall and flooding. Why might that be? Leptospirosis is a disease of urban slums transmitted in rat urine. So where you have open sewers and you have seasonal rainfall and flooding, it is more likely you're going to get contaminated by rat urine and contracted the disease. The second citation of the same paper is that something to do with the environment. Our findings confirm previous hypotheses to do with ecological studies about the infrastructure deficiencies of favelas. And the third one is a citation about the infectious agent, the spirochete bacteria that causes the disease. So here we see three separate citations in the same paper for different purposes. But wouldn't it be nice if the author could know something about that? So if we go back to this paper for a moment and we go to the introduction, you'll see here two of those in-text citations are highlighted in red. And when you mouse over them, you pull back, we've done this manually, but my colleague Stephen Wong at CSIRO in Sydney is developing technology to do this automatically by text mining. He was one of the finalists in the Elsevier Grand Challenge of clever new things to do with publications, and we hope he will come to Oxford next year and we'll collaborate on taking this further. This is what I call citations in context. The ability to take the context of an in-text reference pointer and relate that to statements in the cited paper so that the reader can see whether it's worth going off to read the cited paper without having to break away from the paper he's reading, find something else, maybe pay a subscription fee for it if he hasn't got access to it automatically, and so on. So in this first example, we pull back fairly bland statements about slums and disease. But in the second example here, which is talking about rainfall and flooding, we actually pull back data from the cited paper that shows the connection between the disease outbreak and the rainfall. And that is very valuable. So let's go back to the presentation here. So in that Lancet paper, the Coe et al. Paper, there are a number of statements that relate to the in-text context of those citations. So we just to remind you, there were three about rainfall and flooding, about the environment, and about infectious agents. And we can relate certain of the things from the cited paper back to those three, A, B, and C. And as I said, some of that is real data, not just words. And so using the SPAR ontologies, we're now able to encode that whole ecosystem of relationships, all the elements between the in-text reference pointers in A and the relevant items in the cited paper. And I've color-coded these, the citations, the referencing, and the relevance. So along the top, we see that the PLOS article cites the Lancet article. Within the PLOS article is a particular in-text reference pointer, reference number 6, which has a context. And here is a text of that context. That denotes a reference in the reference list, which references the same Lancet article. And within that Lancet article are these three items, 4, 5, and 9, and here they are specified as text, and graphical data, which are of relevance to that in-text citation. Now, I know this is a little bit elaborate, but it shows you the power of this stuff. And what we would clearly love is that we move from a situation where the reader has to work that all out for himself or herself to a system where it's all encoded so that this can be automatically discovered by the appropriate tools. Finally, I want to talk about the Open Citation Project, which is a new project recently funded by the GISC to publish bibliographic citations as linked open data on the web. We have a number of partners that are listed there. I won't take time to go through them individually. Our objectives are to establish opencitation.net, which would be a public RDF triple store, a database for biomedical literature citations. We're doing this by harvesting references from journal articles, starting with the open access articles in UK.net Central, particularly those of the Public Library of Science and Biomed Central. And we hope to lead on to other publishers willing for Crossref to release their citation data and other articles that we can gain from other open access repositories, such as ePubliches. See, I've got a typo there. I apologize for that. We're in process now with the PubMed Central data of converting this to RDF using the SPAR ontologies, particularly CITO. And then we wish to publish the references from each paper. Clearly, there's an academic endeavor that has gone on to create the references. We include particular references and exclude other ones. So we want to keep those references together. We don't just want to publish individual citations atomistically. We think the whole reference list should be treated as a body, We want to publish this as a named draft, which is a technical term for how you do it in RDF, with a DOI, so it can be cited. And the data site organisation, British Library, are helping us with that. And then, thank you. And then we wish to publish these as open link data on the Talis Connected Commons platform under an open access license, where anyone would be free to use those. I'm not going to go into this, but here is an example of one such citation and the rich metadata you can create around it. I'm sure people have access to these slides later and you can look at it. But you can see it uses CITO to describe it. Why you cite a particular paper, it allows you to determine what the nature of that is using Fabio and how many times it's been cited globally, and so on. So we've only got limited funding, it's only a year project, we can't boil the whole ocean, as people say. We want to show that it's feasible to publish open citations and establish best practice. And while we are only getting incomplete citation data, we still think that's useful. It's certainly better than nothing, and as with many Web3 services, the more data is added, the more valuable the resource will become. And once the data are out there, then people can start to interrogate the citation network created, and clever people in the machine learning network analysis communities can start to apply tools that I can't hope to emulate to analyze these data and hopefully come up with new things. So why participate in this? We're going to start with our core publishers. And having established those procedures, we want to put in place an ongoing mechanism so other publishers can also participate. Exposing citation data as open link data will increase exposure both to the citing and the cited papers. That is almost inevitable. And it will drive new readers to publishers' sites. And we hope to demonstrate that by publishing click-through information about people coming to opencitations.net and then going on to find the full-text articles. Now, for subscription access journals, publication of the citation data at the time of publication would be enormously beneficial. If publishers wish to put an embargo on when their papers become open, then data at that later stage will still be valuable. 2 or 3 years down the line, that 6 month delay won't seem so important. Crossref is keen to get involved in this, and it may provide a useful tool that will enable us to interact with many publishers in a fairly synchronized way. So just to conclude with an analogy, waiting for some international committee in Copenhagen or Cancun to solve the problems of global warming is not necessarily the way forward. Each of us can act, turning down our thermostat, limiting our petrol consumption, etc. Similarly, we can do something to increase our data. And so my plea to you, whether you're a publisher, a researcher, or whatever you are, is that there is value in open data, particularly open data that reference publications, that will allow users to find published references, and I would encourage you to participate in this activity. Thank you, David.
Thank you, David. We don't really have time for a question, but since we have to swap computers up, we'll do one question, okay, while the other computer is getting reconnected and Cameron comes up.
Hi, David. I've actually got two questions. I guess you can choose to answer one if you like. How do you prevent the balkanization when you look at ontologies around this space, and how do these things work with other ontologies like the CytoSwan ontology and Bebo ontology?
Yes, I didn't get the first question. I missed one word.
So with a number of possible ontologies to choose from,
yes,
how do you prevent a kind of balkanization of efforts?
Right.
And,
okay.
And in the light of that,
on the plane coming over, I was busy revising a paper in which we harmonize our ontologies with the Swan ontology from Harvard. So that's an example of the sort of activities that are required. and I'm about to publish a mapping between Bebo and our ontologies, particularly Fabio. And we're just about to set up a community so that other people, I mean, we've done this more or less as a solo effort so far, but that's clearly not sustainable. We need community involvement. We invite community involvement in developing these ontologies. And I was talking to Trish Wiesel of BioPortals at this seminar I've just come back from about how to do that and where to publish the ontologies and what support mechanisms and so on. So it's in progress, it's not there yet.